We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
The Major League Baseball season begins this week, and the man with more hits than any other player in the game's history, Pete Rose, is not in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Rose was banished for life from baseball in 1989 for gambling on his own team. Best-selling author Keith O'Brien has written a new book, Charlie Hustle, The Rise and Fall of Pete Rose and the Last Glory Days of Baseball. It may be the biography of a man who was one of the all-time greats and most admired players on the baseball field, but off the field lived a life of controversy, chaos, and that may have ruined or at least had a negative impact on other people's lives along the way. Keith O'Brien joins us on The Spark today. Mr. O'Brien, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what inspired you to write a book about an 80-something-year-old Pete Rose that has been out of the game for so long?
Well, I'd say two reasons. The first is, even though he has been written about before, I don't think we looked at his story through the right prism. And, you know, I never saw this book as a baseball book. There is, to be clear, lots of baseball in it. But I saw this as a story of a man. The story of an ordinary man from an ordinary working class background of ordinary talents and athleticism who never should have made it out of the west side of Cincinnati, but climbs all the way to the top of the mountain with grit and hard work. And also, by the way, a lot of lucky breaks and then loses it all. And I wanted to tell that story. With granular, on the ground reporting, and I did so, with unprecedented access. Pete Rose has never granted an interview before for a book. He did speak to me at length, although I should say, Scott, he doesn't speak to me anymore. He doesn't call me back anymore. So this was an important story, I felt like, and it was important not just because he's getting older and everyone else who lived it is getting older. But because the world has changed and the world has changed a lot, even in the last few years. And those changes, don't expunge the black marks on Pete's record. Not at all. All those black marks are part of this story. But the sweeping legalization of gambling in America, felt like a good time to go back and visit the story of one of our most notorious gamblers. And, that's not a phrase that Pete Rose would use, but that is what he was.
All the reasons you just listed is timely, but it is especially timely now with the game's biggest star, Shohei Ohtani, who the Los Angeles Dodgers, for those who aren't aware, fired his translator last week for gambling, stealing money from Ohtani. Ohtani held a press conference the other day, said he hasn't gambled on sports. So it is especially timely now with baseball's biggest star that could be involved in gambling as well. Everyone is complicated in their own way, but Pete Rose may be one of the most complicated people I have ever read about, ever come across. How would you describe Rose as the baseball player first?
Well, he played with fury, a fury that even guys back then didn't have, in an era when every single one of them was playing for the next year's contract. Every single player in the 1960s had no guaranteed deal. They were playing for the next salary. And Pete plays with such ferocity that he stands out even then. You know, this whole persona of Charlie Hustle. You know, he sprints down to first base on walks. He slides into second base and willingly gets into fights with shortstops and second basemen trying to break up double plays. He slams into catchers, breaking their shoulder in a meaningless midseason exhibition game. This entire attitude, persona, approach is what makes him iconic, you know, for fans. And you know, obviously he's going to have much success on the field. You know, rookie of the year, multiple batting titles, MVP, multiple World Series titles. But even without all of that, he still would have been iconic because of how he played and what that said about us. Americans loved that because, you know, Pete Rose's story sort of personified America. He was an underdog player without the obvious athleticism, you know, playing at the highest level and doing it in that way that Americans love to tell ourselves we can always do things. If we work hard, if we try hard, if we apply ourselves, things will work out.
All right. So then let's turn to the other side. Pete Rose, from what you describe in the book, may be the poster boy for narcissism. How would you describe Pete Rose, the person off the field?
What I think is interesting about Pete Rose is that many of those same qualities I just described that made him a success on the field are also the same qualities that doom him to failure as a man. He approaches life with a certain ferocity. He approaches what become addictions with a certain ferocity. And, you know, he is unwilling to, off the field, to be vulnerable. He's unwilling off the field to ever appear weak in his mind. And another thing that I think is notable about Pete Rose is he always thinks that things are going to work out for him, that it's all going to work out in the end. Because even today, I'll say, Pete Rose is an optimist. And so these same qualities are going to hurt him off the field because as he spirals into poor behavior with women, with gamblers, with bookies, with debts, and then is called out for some of these mistakes in 1989, he cannot be honest. He cannot be vulnerable. He cannot admit to what he has done, an admission that, based on my reporting, probably would have saved him decades of heartache. He's going to lie. And then he's going to double down on those lies for 15 years. And all of these things, you know, are why we're still wrestling with the legacy of Pete Rose today.
You say that Pete Rose was an optimist, and he probably was one of those gamblers that was an optimist that, oh, has to chase the next big win. But from what you write, he was not a good gambler.
You know, I did interviews with people for this book who've never spoken before. You know, three different men who placed his bets on baseball, men who were in his inner circle in the 1970s and 80s, men who were at the track with him, saw him bet, saw him lose. And one of these men, a former, you know, Cincinnati police officer who worked security details for Pete back in those days, said that he had never seen a more terrible gambler than Pete Rose. Anybody who knows anything about gambling knows that if you're going to even have a chance to profit from it, it has to be calculated. It has to be targeted. There's a reason why they call you know, smart gamblers in Vegas sharps. You got to be sharp about it. And, you know, that means maybe placing a bet on one game a day, maybe two games a day, maybe three. You know, based on my reporting in the mid-1980s, Pete Rose, right around this time of year, by the way, March Madness, college basketball, wall-to-wall sports coverage, Pete Rose was placing as much as 8, 10, 12 sports bets a day. And he was doing it, you know, oftentimes at $2,000 a pop. And it got out of control. As often happens with gambling, he did chase his losses. And that's not a Pete Rose problem. That's a gambling problem. Anyone who's ever, lost $20 on a Sunday afternoon Eagles game, let's say in the fall, may in their back of their mind say, well, maybe I'll try to win that $20 back tonight by betting on the Sunday night game that features the Giants. It is an addictive practice. It can be entertaining, and it is now legal, obviously, in 38 states, but it is absolutely an addictive product. And my reporting shows that whether or not he wants to admit it, Pete Rose was addicted to gambling in the 1980s.
You mentioned Pete Rose, and I think it often is referred to his women, the women that he consorted with, he married. He married fairly young, but the entire time he was married, he was seeing other women. He was involved in a long affair with a woman who had ties to the underworld. He apparently had an affair with a teenage girl in the mid-70s. I mean, and he stayed married to his first wife for a long time while a lot of this is going on. I mean, this is, again, just behavior of an irresponsible person.
Absolutely. And, just as his gambling was well known and an open secret in the Cincinnati clubhouse by the mid to late 1970s, so too were his many affairs. Like a lot of things in Pete's life, he took this to the extremes. I interviewed some of these women, including his first wife, Carolyn Engelhart Rose, and one of these women that he had a multi-year affair with in the 1970s that ultimately led to a paternity lawsuit because this woman had a child that was Pete Rose's. That woman's name was Terry Rubio. She was in her early 20s when their affair began sometime in early 1976. And Pete did very little to hide it. Terry Rubio traveled on the road with Pete Rose and the Reds. Terry told me that she booked her travel directly with the Reds traveling secretary at the time. There were points in the 1970s when Pete Rose was staying in a hotel room with his wife, and Terry Rubio was on another floor in the same hotel in a different room, according to the interviews that she gave me. So he takes it to the extreme. And I write about these things in the book and include it in the narrative because I think it helps exemplify how he was unraveling as a person at the same moment that he was having his greatest success as a player. And, I think there's something to be said here about, how we celebrate athletes, because even the press in the late 1970s knew some of these things about Pete Rose, but they shielded him from the truth and shielded us, the fans and the readers from the truth, and gave us the story that we wanted to hear, the story of this iconic hero.
Mm. One of the things that's so incredible is how he did perform on the field while all this is happening off the field. How could he separate the two?
That's a great point, Scott. And I did talk to many athletes about this. In addition to my interviews with people in Rose's inner circle, I interviewed dozens of former major league ball players. Some of them, iconic stars and Hall of Famers in their own right. Some of these guys were the guy at the end of the bench. But everybody agreed that, a ball player, just like you and me, just like everybody else, sometimes brings his troubles to work with him. Players told me that, if they were having trouble at home with their marriage, if they were, having financial difficulties, that weighed on them, even at the plate, in a game. It was hard to separate. And Pete Rose did not have that problem. In 1978, in the midst of all these things we've just discussed, spiraling affairs off the field, an unwanted pregnancy and baby for Terry Rubio in Florida, swirling concerns about his gambling, meetings about his gambling in Cincinnati in the Reds front office. In the midst of all this, Pete Rose goes on one of the most epic hitting streaks in Major League Baseball history, a 44-game hit streak that still stands today as the longest hit streak in the past 70 years. It falls 12 hits, 12 games short of the all-time record Joe DiMaggio, that epic 56-game hitting streak in 1941. But we haven't seen anything like it since. And this streak begins and consumes the entire summer, and a summer of questions for Pete Rose.
And the pitcher who ended that hitting streak, Gene Garber, lives in our area, and I've talked with Gene Garber over the years. And I don't know if I can go out and go as far as saying he's bitter, but he was not happy about how Pete Rose talked about him afterwards. So we only have a few minutes left, and I want to touch on so much. Rose became manager of the Reds, but he was betting on baseball, including his own team. How did the investigation come together, and what did it show?
Well, there's some interesting historical parallels to the scandal that's unfolding right now in Los Angeles. Pete Rose's problems that lead to the investigation in 1989 really begin a few years earlier with all the gambling that's happening and debts that were owed to people and or alleged debts. And one of these men who believes that Pete Rose owes him $40,000 tips off Sports Illustrated. That Pete Rose has been betting on baseball. Major League Baseball gets wind of the tip and the investigation that Sports Illustrated is doing. So, reporters are digging in. Major League Baseball is now aware. And at the same time, Scott, federal investigators are pursuing the men on the outskirts of Pete Rose's inner circle and sometimes his closest friends. And, one by one, these men begin to tell what they know. And Major League Baseball has no choice but to ask Pete Rose what's happening. They do it at first in a secret meeting in the Park Avenue offices of Major League Baseball in New York. Within just a couple of days, the news of that meeting leaks. Major League Baseball has hired its own investigator, an outside special counsel, to track down the truth. And America and baseball finds itself absolutely overwhelmed by the greatest betting scandal since the 1919 World Series.
Bart Giamatti, who was the commissioner then, gave Rose options, and he accepted a banishment for life. Now, we only have a couple of minutes left, so I definitely want to ask this question. When Rose's name comes up most often today, it's about the question of whether he should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. We put this question out to our listeners, and almost every one of them, maybe one, said yes, he should. Some of those comments: this is such a no-brainer. Of course he should be inducted in the Hall of Fame. It's based on talent. The commissioner had a vendetta against Pete. Some of the other things that were said: yes, it's time. I believe he apologized for the vice that led to his banishment. Had he taken drugs or was an alcoholic, recovering from those diseases often lead to a second chance. Let him in. Prisoners serving life sentences are allowed parole after all this time. And final one said he should be in with a plaque next to his name that explains his crime against baseball. So all those things, it seems like people, if okay, now that's just a small sample. What do you think?
So the book, you know, my book, Charlie Hustle, doesn't make a case one way or the other, as you know. You know, this is a story not of opinions, but of history. I looked at his story through the prism of history, told that story. People can come to their own conclusions. But of course, I have thought a lot about it. And my prevailing thought is similar to one you just mentioned there. I think we've lost perspective. You know, we put our athletes on pedestals. We ascribe to them moral values that they may or may not have. And at the end of the day, most of them are flawed just like us. And they are and we don't really know them. So for those reasons, in a blanket way, I believe that players should be enshrined or not enshrined based on what they did on the field. And if their mistakes are so egregious, I agree. Let's put them on the plaque at Cooperstown for perpetuity.
We have about 45 seconds left. I want to thank you very much for being with us today. Part of the title of your book, The Last Glory Days of Baseball. Why do you say it's the last glory days of baseball in about 30 seconds?
Everything changed in the 30 years that Pete Rose was in baseball. And without question in my mind, 1989 is the end of the age of the innocents, not just in baseball and sports. I think you can argue everything before Pete is the age of the heroes, and everything afterwards is the age of the cheaters.
Keith O'Brien, his new book is Charlie Hustle, The Rise and Fall of Pete Rose and the Last Glory Days of Baseball. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.